I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And we have the podcast Office Ladies. Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories and lots of laughs.
Follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
All righty, rocking and rolling, hour number two of our radio program. It is the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on the Infinity Sports Network. Antonio Daniels is going to join us coming up at 5:20 p.m. Eastern Time, 2:20 p.m. Pacific. We'll chat it up with the voice of the Indiana Pacers and Mark Boyle coming up momentarily. As, man, what a last week or so that we've had of sports, whether you look at the Stanley Cup Final, that series tied up at one apiece, as you did get to see Brad Marchand get the game winner on Friday night in double overtime. So three overtimes in the first two games of the Stanley Cup Final. No, I did not misspeak on that one. In the NBA Finals, you had that epic game one comeback by the Indiana Pacers, then followed up, which was a game two dud overall, because I would have liked to have seen a close game. But the Oklahoma City Thunder, they do what they do best. And that's not only win, but they win by double digits, securing a 123-107 victory. And that was their 62nd. It's wild when you say that. 62nd double-digit victory of the season. I was at UFC 316 on Saturday night, as we just told you. And then the French Open, you did have Coco Gauff win. Sabalenka come off as a sore loser after the match with all the excuses. And she had to issue a statement on that. You know, it is what it is, and you keep it moving. And then you had the incredible comeback by Carlos Alcaraz as he was as dead could be in a match. And not only did he come on back, but he comes on back and he wins the French Open there. So just what a wild stretch of sports. And it's always crazy this time of the year when you have the Stanley Cup Final and you also have the NBA Finals. But to see that stretch of what we got just from Wednesday, and you also factor in the tennis of it as well. Man, that is a phenomenal stretch of sports from Wednesday on. And we'll see what the Indiana Pacers will have when they go back home. This series now all tied at one apiece. And we now welcome in the voice of the Indiana Pacers. And that, of course, is Mark Boyle. Mark, appreciate the time. Thanks so much for doing this. How you been?
I am well. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. So the objective, obviously, was to go get one at Oklahoma City. The Pacers clearly do that after the thrilling game, after what we saw in game one. They unfortunately did not play well last night. What's kind of your feeling, what you saw from the Indiana Pacers in the first two games of the NBA Finals?
Well, I will make a slight correction there, because it's one of the things that distinguishes this team from some of the others I've been around. The goal was not to get one. The goal was to get two. Now, they got one, and they have home court advantage, so they accomplished something. But this team looks at things much differently than most any team I've ever been around. And the old cliche is, let's get one and then go from there. They went there determined to get two. That said, they didn't. Oh,
you got the cat in the background right there. Is it the good luck charm now for the Pacers?
Well, see, the cat doesn't like being in the background. That's why. The goal was to get two. They did get one. And the reality is now that it's a best of five and they have home court. So, objectively, they're better off than they were when the series started, and I would think that's a good thing.
What do you think that environment's going to be like when you next see them in action? NBA Finals game. We know the city's tradition with basketball when you get to see that get underway coming up on Wednesday night.
It'll be good. It'll be chaotic. It'll be loud. It'll be energetic. All of that. Like it is, I think, in most every arena when you get to a certain level of the playoffs. That said, Oklahoma City has an entirely distinctive presence. It's more like a college environment, starting with the fact that the fans don't sit until the Thunder score their first field goal. They're chanting the entire game. Now, we saw some of that in Game 6 of the New York series when the fans were literally standing the entire game. It's a distinctive home court advantage, but the Pacers have actually been just as good on the road as they have been at home, more or less. They've lost a couple of games both places, and they've done okay on the road too. But the home court is just an advantage, and how you quantify that, I don't know. But I can tell you this, it will be loud, it will be vibrant, and it's a definite advantage. We'll see if they can capitalize on that.
Yeah, and you look at Tyrese Halliburton, did not play well in game one, but he had the miraculous shot at the end, which is just starting to become the norm, obviously, with the Pacers. I love watching him play, and he's a top 10 player in the league. Last night wasn't at his best, We all seen the video coming off the podium of him limping. What can you tell us about the health of Tyrese Haliburton as we still have a few days to get ready for game number three?
Well, the next game is until Wednesday. They didn't seem real concerned about it afterwards. Now, that could just be the way they're positioning themselves. Maybe he won't play at all. I'm theorizing to two different extremes. My guess is he'll be ready to go. But what they need from him, because let's face objective reality. Oklahoma City is the better team. Now, they're not so much better that they can't be beaten. Denver almost did it. The Pacers did it in game one. The Pacers have a chance to win this series, but I just don't see how they do it unless Haliburton plays at a high level every single game. You can break down stats any way you want. There's one that we had last night that they're undefeated in the playoffs when shooting 46% or better. They're winless in the playoffs when shooting 45% or worse. And there's a correlation there because when Haliburton is on his game, penetrating, creating chaos, hitting his own shots, then they generally shoot for a very high percentage. Before last night, they were shooting 50% from the floor and 40% from three-point range over the entire playoff run, and that's extraordinary.
Now, you get to...
If he comes and plays at a high level every night, they have a chance. If he doesn't, they don't.
Now, you get to paint the picture, obviously, on what Haliburton does when you're broadcasting the games on the Pacers radio network. How do you describe just what he's been able to do? I know last year they went to the conference finals. This year, though, those four miraculous shots, right? We've played all your calls going back on Friday after we got to put a bow on game one of the NBA finals. To see what this guy's really been able to do the last 2 years, how do you even describe it since you do get to do it basically on a night-in, night-out basis?
Well, you just try to focus on the play and describe the play with, at least this is how I do it, without trying to toss around stuff in your head. Oh, this is fantastic. How can I go way outside the bounds to describe how fantastic it is? I just try to stay in the moment and not get too extreme. That's also subjective. Maybe some people think it is too extreme. But I just try to describe the play and then contextualize it afterwards. And I know you've seen these numbers. We've all seen them. They've had one of these games in each series. And depending on which game you're talking about, they had a 1 in 1,012 chance to win or a 1 in 90, 800 million gazillion chance. And the odds, as one of the graphics pointed out, to win all four in such a manner was 1 in 1.5 million. So you could say they're a team of destiny, or you could say they've used up all their luck. It's probably somewhere in between. And when you do finish like that, the thing to remember that people, I think, sometimes don't take into account, and this does not discredit what the Pacers have done. You need the other team to make mistakes also. In that Milwaukee win, Gary Trent just dropped a ball out of bounds with nobody around him. And there were things like that happening in all of those comebacks. It doesn't diminish what the Pacers have done. They still have to execute. And Haliburton in particular has been spectacular in those situations. But you do wonder, at least on some level, how long can that go on? And if you need that to continue, can you really hope to win the series?
Yeah, and going off of that, you know, because it's easy when I was at game one of the Eastern Conference Finals with 2:45 to go and the Knicks are up 14 to basically think to myself, okay, this game is over. I don't know if it's ever different for you when you're calling these games and you've seen so many crazy victories through the years. But when you look at the four ways that Haliburton's created these moments, did you even think through some of them that they were definitely over and that's what he made it even more stunning for you? Are you as stunned as we are when we were watching this stuff?
Well, in retrospect, I was stunned, but I try to stay in the moment to describe the single play in front of me. And unless there's a reason to contextualize it, I don't. The example you cite is perfect. Down 14 with whatever it was, two and change, you get a basket, it's down 12. I don't think about the rally beginning. They get another one, they're down 10 or 9 or whatever it is. I just try to call the plays, and then as the game gets further and further along, we do contextualize it. When they got to within a possession with less than a minute to go, then you do go back and say they were down 14 with 2 minutes to go or whatever the situation is. But I think if you start to think in terms of the big picture, when you're calling something in live action that you don't have a script for and you've got to make sure, especially on radio where there's no picture, that you have to get it accurate. There's always time to contextualize it after you describe the action, and that's how I try to do it.
Why I like this NBA Finals so much, Mark Boyle, is you look at the Pacers. I know they got off to a really bad start this season, but when they went up against the Cavs, many didn't think they would win. Many didn't think they were going to beat the Knicks. 2 months right ago, people said, the NBA players, that Tyrese Haliburton was the most overrated player in the league, and now they've gotten a lot of respect. They've gotten a lot of credit. The Thunder, on the other hand, they've been the best team in the league throughout the entire year, and every segment I feel as if someone's trying to take away from the Thunder and tell me why they're not going to win the championship, and last night it was their 62nd victory of the season by double-digit points. Is there a little like mutual respect here from the Pacers organization and the Thunder organization? Obviously, we know both want to win a championship just because of the way, even if it's been different paths, that they've both been discredited at times this season.
That's an interesting question. I don't know the answer. On a big picture level, it's obvious that the organizations respect one another. But I don't know if that small market, nobody knows who we are, we don't get the credit we deserve aspect of it comes into play in terms of that respect. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. But these two teams are really similar in the way they go about their business. They don't have a lot of the advantages that the major markets have. They built their team through drafts and trades. They don't lure significant free agents because in large part they can't. They do have disadvantages being in small markets. And so that may come into play in terms of how they view each other. I think that would be, though, a franchise vision rather than a team vision. The players and coaches themselves, I doubt, take that into account when they're trying to figure out how to beat each other.
You've seen a lot of basketball. When you get to Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, he's won the MVP this year for a reason. He's three wins away from winning a championship and probably the finals MVP. I know he missed a shot in game one, but he's been really damn great in this series, and you saw it once again last night. How did the Pacers, I'm not saying you stop him, but how do they try to slow him down and maybe have him get an off night?
Well, the Pacers have gotten better defensively as the season has worn along, but I still think it would be a stretch to call them a good defensive team. They're competent, and they have their moments, and they do have some really good individual defenders like Andrew Nembhard, Aaron Nesmith, Ben Shepherd. Miles Turner is a good rim protector and so on. But even in the earlier rounds, they didn't really stop Donovan Mitchell. They didn't really stop Jalen Brunson. They didn't really stop Antetokounmpo. They do try to make them work as hard as they can, though, to get their production. And they did that really well in game one. Gilgeous-Alexander got his, but he had to dominate the ball more than probably would be good for the Thunder. Remember, they had a season low in assists. And that last shot he did miss, but it was a contested shot and it wasn't easy. It wasn't like he blew an open five-footer. So they'll do what they can to make him work. They'll throw different looks at him from time to time. But the reality is they're a competent defensive team, not a great defensive team like the Thunder. And this guy is really good. He's going to get his. The only question is, how hard does he have to work to get it? And that's, I think, if you're the Pacers, the best you can hope for. And that doesn't put them on an island. For most teams, that's the best you can hope for with this guy. There's a reason he's the MVP. He led the league in scoring. He had more 30-point games than any other player. He had more 40-point games than any other player. He is really, really good. And while not literally unstoppable, you're just not going to shut him down.
He's the voice of the Pacers. We've been playing his calls all throughout the postseason. He's Mark Boyle. Mark, appreciate the time. Enjoy the Game 3 of the NBA Finals coming up on Wednesday night.
Hey, appreciate the invitation. Thank you.
You got it. There he is, Mark Boyle, joining us on the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network.
The podcast Campus Files is back with more stories of scandal, crime, and intrigue on college campuses.
It is not hard to destroy a college.
It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.